You're listening to the Paranormal UK Radio Network, the best in paranormal talk radio in the UK and around the world.
Welcome to the Paranormal Pendle Podcast, coming to you from the heart of Pendle Witch Country in the northwest of England. My name is Craig Bryant, author, investigator and collector of stories. Join me as we take a journey into the paranormal, UFO sightings, cryptozoology and big cats. This is the Paranormal Pendle Podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 33 of Paranormal Pendle, broadcasting to the Paranormal UK Radio Network at paukradio.com. My guest on this episode is Anne Prendergast from the Paranormal Group, and I think this is a fantastically named group, Creep Real. So, hi Anne, thanks very much for joining me.
Oh, hi Craig. Thanks for having me. I'm glad you like the name.
No, I think it's fantastic. It always makes me chuckle when I see it on Facebook. So, brilliant. Who came up with the name, if you don't mind me asking?
So it was one of the group members. So what we want when we started the group up, which is about over a year, we're about a year and a half old now. We wanted to make sure that the group was inclusive and excuse me, everyone had a view. So people came up with suggestions, and that was one of them, and we liked it, so we picked it.
Yeah, well, I think it's genius. I think it's a really great name. So what was the idea then behind starting the group? How did you get into the paranormal in the first place, and how did that then lead to sort of setting up the group?
I loved the paranormal from when I was 6 years old. It was more to do with witches. First, we used to go down to my uncle's house in Hounslow, and to get us to sleep, there was a massive, huge fir tree in the garden. And they said, if young girls, six years of age, don't go to sleep, with Matilda the witch, who lives on the top of the tree, is going to come and tell you off. So we were just transfixed then, saying like, we need to see Matilda the Witch. And I think it come from there. Like, my dad used to tell us ghost stories. Excuse me, I've got a bit tickly cough. Okay. He used to tell us ghost stories. And I've always been intrigued. I watched Most Haunted. I enjoyed it. So I just wanted to see if there was life after death, so to speak, activity. And, yeah, it just come from there. Went on an investigation. As a paid member of the public, loved it, become obsessed, and it's just snowballed from there.
So whose idea was it then to start the group? Because you're an investigation group, aren't you? You do lots of investigations and stuff like that. So whose idea was it then to start that? How did you become involved in that?
Well, it was mine, so I founded the group. And what it come from, I was working for a company up until lockdown. So in lockdown, we said, right, what can we do to keep us out there, to keep us present? And we found a love of exploring. And then we'd go off, find these different places, like the abandoned graveyard in Bewdley. And we started to do lives from there. And I just found that I preferred researching places. I like the places that aren't regularly done on the paranormal circuit, and finding that story and going off and investigating it, like bringing it live, so people then could have their own opportunity to be involved also as well. And a lot of people would say, we can't afford ghost hunts. So this was a brilliant way of keeping them interested in lockdown and having their own ghost hunt as well, for them to be part of it. So it sort of grew from there, really. We sort of become a family. So I left that company, and people were like, will you please start up some live investigations? So I was like, all right, we'll see how we get on. And so we you know, it's not just about paranormal. It's about, we've got it in our bio, finding places that have been lost to the, you know, the beauty of the world, like church ruins, graveyards and stuff like that, and bringing them to life and let people know that things are there. Like, one of my passions is old buildings. I love old buildings. You know, a member of English Heritage, a member of National Trust. And yeah, it's just documenting things, documenting creepy things of beauty, really. So, yes, yeah, so that's how it started. So it started from previous lives, and we thought we'll give it a go and carry on. And it's, I found my love of ghost hunting again.
So how many members of the group do you have at the moment then who actually go out and do investigations with you?
So we've, yeah, so we've, that's where we're a bit different. So we've got over 1,000 members. It's a free page. And like, people can watch the lives, but there's the main sort of people that will watch the lives and be involved. And we've gone up to Northumberland to meet some of them. And what we say to people is, if you want to come on a live, just inbox us and come. It's not a problem. So we'll, you know, so people can be involved. I think it's important for them to see it from different perspectives, because when they watch it, they will see stuff that we don't pick up. And it's different when you're actually filming it also as well. So people have really enjoyed the fact that they can come. I mean, it's their own responsibility and stuff. So, yeah, so anyone can come with us, but they're just going back their own way there.
So do you live broadcasts on Facebook, or is it YouTube, or both?
On Facebook, yeah. So we do on our Facebook page. It's mainly on a Sunday, but sometimes we'll change it around once a week. And also we will post on YouTube also as well. Like I said, before we went live, I've been up to Chester this weekend, and there was a few haunted pubs. So I've just took some pictures. So I'll document that in a post also. So yeah, like to try and keep things as active as possible. So not just about paranormal, just showing any sort of creepy beauty to the world.
All right, so let's get into some of your investigations then, because I'm really looking forward to talking to you about these. You sent me a list before we started, which is always great. And the one, as I said to you before we started recording, that I really wanted to chat to you about was Bob in Jail.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So what happened?
Well, I've been to Bodmin Jail twice, but as on an investigation, not running my own investigation. So the first time I went with my friend, and it was weird to start with because I didn't know at the time that there's a pub in there. So normally your investigations was 9 till 3. This one started at 11 and finished at 6 o'clock in the morning, which was like, oh my God. Mm. So that felt different. I can honestly, I mean, I class myself as open-minded. I think I've seen enough stuff now to go, yeah, there is activity there, but I don't always go with everything. I try and debunk it, and then I know for definite it's good. From the minute, I've never gone to such an active place. To the minute we got in there, to the minute we left, it was active. And what I struggled with the most was the overwhelming sense of doom in there. Absolute doom and you know, frustration. You know, you always want to see something. We saw lots of light anomalies, stones were thrown, and we saw, but I remember seeing, like, in this, I think it's the sailor's wing, a black figure, and we heard keys jangling. But the worst part for me, Craig, was the actual cellar. And it was 3 o'clock in the morning, and I just said, I've got to get out of here. And anyone knows me, I'm quite brave, I'm quite daring, and that was not me. And what I felt was that people were sort of crawling up my legs and grabbing me and things. It was I remember burying myself into my friend's arm. Mm-hmm. So then we got with the medium, we did a circle, and you could see he was struggling. He was struggling with breathing. And what we could see was, you could see like a ligature around his neck. Oh, and we was 10 of us in the group, but we could see another 3 figures surrounding us. It was just, I just couldn't describe how intense it was. And I remember at 3 o'clock in the morning, emailing my partner, going, will you come and get me? And that's how bad it was. And I went back again just to see like what it was like, and it was just as bad.
So what were these figures like then? Can you sort of describe what they look like?
One was a warden, so he was very tall, black. You could see, you know, like the old sort of caps that they used to wear.
Yeah.
He was wearing one of those, and he was also regularly seen as well. We was in a circle calling out, and me and my friend and another guest actually saw legs walking past. I mean, we obviously the floors have moved. There's a lot of rubble in there, and they've done a lot of building work and stuff. So we could actually see, legs. When I was in the cellar, I mean, I don't class myself as a medium. I'm sensitive and this, that, and the other. When I was in the cellar, it felt like it was like a male energy, like really sort of dirty, like ripped clothing, and it sort of dunk of turf, and felt like they were crawling up us, and it felt like they had chains around them as well. That's what we could say. It was just an intense investigation. Amazing place, amazing. Oh, and water appeared in the middle of the floor, which it didn't make sense. There wasn't any pipes there. There wasn't anything there at all, and it just appeared. We're like, how did that happen? And the staff said it happens quite a bit, but we can't explain it. But I think they've done it up now. So I did go back just as a tour, brought my niece there. I didn't have the same experience because it was public and stuff, but they have done it up. So I don't know if all the same areas you can access on an investigation, but I would always say, always recommend that one. Always recommend it if you want to be scared and coming out thinking, what the hell's happened? That one's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
It does sound like there's an awful lot of activity. Can we just sort of backpedal a little bit, because I'm fascinated by the legs. Was it just a pair of legs, or was there a body attached to it?
It was just a pair of legs.
Hey, wow.
So what we debunked it was, we said, well, obviously the foundations of the building move over the years, and maybe it was sort of they were walking on a different floor to what was probably there then, to speak, and that's how we tried to explain it. And we spoke to the medium at the time, and he said maybe it's the foundations of the building that had actually changed. But one thing that was good about that night, everything we experienced was backed up by the staff that had worked there. So that for me was brilliant. And I never, from now, like, I research the stories. I don't really research the activity because I want to go in a bit blind. Never researched anything going in, want to go in blind. And we wouldn't know those stories because, it's not commonly known on the internet about places and different people's experiences. But, it was just really good. And I think it's the sailor's wing that is quite famous for stuff being thrown. There was rocks thrown, and we could hear footsteps. We could hear doors slamming. And like, this is in the middle of the night. So outside, like, there's no noise and stuff. But it's just amazing.
So the sailor's wing, is that where they used to put the smugglers then that they caught, or...?
Yeah, I think so. It's the sailors or the naval wing, and it was separate part. I remember having to walk out the jail and walk round to it, and it's open and exposed like the other part of the jail wasn't. But it was so good, and I remember Most Haunted had gone there as well, and they had got some fantastic activity around there. And like, they saw stuff like the tall black figure we saw there, and he's commonly, is it floor six, I think, if I remember right, and he's commonly seen there.
So what about the medium then? You mentioned that you could see a ligature around his neck.
Yeah.
I mean, how did that sort of transpire? How did that come about, and how did he react?
He was struggling. He was. I think what he was doing was trying to bring the spirit through. And we were like, why are you struggling? Were you breathing? Why are you struggling? And we said, God, there's something round his neck. And we thought, has he got a scarf or something? And we could see, it's like, God, it looks like the shape of a rope. It was that clear. Wow. But yet he says, I feel like I'm being pulled back. Mm. And what we didn't realise, I think there was a hanging cell. Not far from there, because I think they've got one in Shrewsbury Prison as well. Yeah. And like it sort of made sense, but then somebody stepped in then and said, just take it off, and he came out of the energy, but he was struggling with his breathing, so it all made complete sense.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a fascinating place.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and the next time I'm down in Cornwall, I'll have to try and go in. I was actually down there last summer, very close to Bodmin, and in fact I was having some really interesting conversations with, because we stayed on a farm, having some very interesting conversations with the farmer's son who sort of lived and worked on the farm with his mum, about the beast of Bodmin.
Yeah.
And we had quite an interesting conversation. I mean, what's your thoughts on that? I mean, he's obviously, you know, that sort of thing and the paranormal is slightly different, but just wondering what your thoughts on that are.
Well, we drove through the moor to get to where the castle. And I mean, is it a myth? I don't know. I like hearing stories of myths. I probably think, well, do you know what? If I saw it, I saw it. If I didn't, I didn't. And if people believe that they've seen it or have experienced it, then go with it. That's my view. But I do like mythology and folklore and stuff like that. I think it's quite interesting because it's come from something. I was recently in Hereford, and like I was doing a blog about a church in Shobden, and you can hear a blacksmith laughing at night by this church, because Hereford's quite linked with the devil, and apparently one day the devil was coming into Shobden because this church was so beautiful, but it was so ornate, but he didn't like it because it was Christianity, and like he didn't like that, and why should they be so powerful? But he was coming to demolished the church. So the blacksmith had saw him on his way, and the devil said to the blacksmith, where's his church? And the blacksmith told him the other way. So the devil walked off. And so apparently on a cold winter's night, you can hear the blacksmith chuckling because he got one over on the devil. And I documented that. I thought it was a brilliant story. Whether it's true or not, it's come from something.
Yeah,
and that's what I like. I thought it was just really fun to get one over on the devil.
I absolutely agree with you. No, I love folklore and you know, legends and myths and all that stuff. I think no matter where you are in the country, I mean, we have up here in the Northwest, we have lots of, you know, stories about the devil and there's a bridge close by called the Devil's Bridge, and you know, it's quite a long sort of involved story, which I'll go into at another time. But no, I absolutely love that sort of thing. It's fascinating. So you would recommend Bodmin Jail then for anybody who's ever in the area to go and have a look and see see what they can pick up. What about some other investigations then? Have you got any other favourites or any others that stand out in particular?
Yeah, my first ever one, and again, I didn't go in as a team. I went, it was a birthday present from my friends. They said, what do you want? I said, I'd love to go on a ghost hunt. So I went with Fright Nights to Alton Towers. So obviously, Alton Towers people go for the ride, but you've got that beautiful tower ruins in the middle of the grounds. And like I've cut through there a few times, just going off to rides and not took any notice of them. But you've got the famous ride Hex in there about the chained oak tree. And that was my first ever one. And it was absolutely brilliant. I really loved it. And I think it's such a shame that they don't do a lot of ghost hunts there, because I'd pay to go back. Mm. We'd gone up into the dining room, and there was heavy oak doors, and there isn't any windows in the towers at all, but those doors, but there was no wind, but those doors slammed. They slammed. We were like, what the hell? There's also a tunnel. So what we thought was the tunnel was used for servants going up to the towers. Mm. And we were standing in the middle of the tunnel in an investigation. And I felt like I was being pulled back. I was like, to my friend, why have you got your arms on my shoulders? And he said, I'm not touching you. And he wasn't. I felt I was being pulled back into the towers. But a brilliant piece of footage, and I haven't seen it for ages. There is a famous story about Alton Towers, about the girl in the dancing girl in the white dress, but she's covered in blood. And she was seen dancing, and we were filming. Didn't think anything of it, desired us nothing. My friend checked it back. She was picked up on the footage. I thought it was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And there was a figure of a black lady that's seen around the towers as well. And you know she's around because there's a smell of lavender. And I think she was one of the aristocracy there, and she lost her baby. And you know, and we got her. But that's where I saw my first ghost. So I'd gone to the toilet and we looked down. I was like, what's that bobbing head? And like the medium was there who I knew. And he was like, look. And I said, yeah. So this head was bobbing. And we said, maybe it's security. So we turned around and no word of a lie. And I still go cold thinking about it now. It was bobbing head, which now I think someone must have been on a horse, went through the doors into the tower.
So was it just the head?
All we could see. I mean, he probably saw more.
Yeah.
But I could just see a bobbing head. Like, you know, when people are on horses and they're sort of cantering and they're going up and down. But I think that's what it was. I think, yeah, he saw a bit more, but it was like someone on a horse and then it went through into the towers. And I remember that clearly to this day, that place is really haunted. It's amazing. But that's where I saw my first ghost.
So was it a man's head or a woman's head?
I got the feeling it was a woman, and the medium who was with me, Mark, he didn't dispute that either.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, really good place. I think, yeah, when people go, you always focus on the ride, but you need to go into those towers. Fantastic.
Yeah, I don't think people realise actually that the name Alton Towers does come from the fact that there's an old sort of, you know, stately home, family, you know, rich family's home in the middle of it, and the amusement park is actually built around it. You know, very few people, I mean, you can see, you know, the ruins, can't you, from a distance, but I think very, very few people actually go there. That's really interesting, actually. Have you done any research at all on what this floating head, who this floating head could be? Because I think it's really interesting, actually, that you seem to pick up on parts of bodies.
So you've got, I know, yeah. I very rarely see all of them.
I was going to say that's really interesting because you mentioned that you sort of very you can pick things up in different places.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting because I know other people and I know myself. You know, I've been in places where I've had a feeling. I've picked up on maybe names or particular types of feelings in places, and perhaps you're sort of picking up partly on these things.
Yeah.
And that's why you sort of just seeing different. No, it sounds silly, and I'm not meaning it to sound silly, but you're seeing legs. No. And a head in another, because you're just picking up on those particular, you know, those particular parts of that manifestation, that spirit.
I think I said I don't class myself as a medium. Very rarely will get a name or anything like that, but yeah, I think it is. I think it's just at that time. I mean, like, you know, when you talk about energies and things, like I can definitely, like, you know, I can tell when there's an energy around, and I sort of get a feeling it's a male, it's a woman. But I think one of my problems was at the start, I probably didn't trust in myself enough. And we always say now, those that come on the lives with us now, go with it. If you've got a name, if you think that it's a man, he's 6 foot and he's wearing a Victorian coat, say it, because everyone connects on different. Everyone connects on different levels, and I think that's what you've. I think that's what you've described also as well. So we just tend to go for it, and now I go for it. Like my friend was telling me a story about this. We was down in Worcester. Like this lady had come to him like in the night, and that sounds dodgy, but it was like an image in the dreams, and he found out. He did some local research and he found out about like this young girl who sadly got murdered and it wasn't far from where we were, and he showed me this picture of who he thought she was, and instantly I said Mary, and he said that's her name, and that doesn't happen a lot for me. So we went out and I did a quick investigation. It was -5, it was freezing. But yeah, and I think you have to just go with it. Go with it and trust your judgment and see.
So with regards to your live broadcast then, I mean, how many have you done? Are we talking dozens? And if so, again, you know, which are the ones that really stand out?
I think I mentioned to you the abandoned graveyard. I've never been to a place like it in my life. And you think, oh, it's a graveyard. It's, you know, this, that and the other. But this place is lost to time. And it was just really sad. It was like, I've never been to anything like it. I was really overwhelmed by it. And there was two parts to it. So we saw a black, again, and he was fully formed, a black figure in the graveyard, but we think he was one of the grave robbers, because there was a lot of the graves had that metal frame around it to stop the grave robbers there. And then you walk, I remember crawling literally through these bushes into another part, and there was this solitary grave on her own, and the lady who was buried there was called Eliza. So we were like, why is she here on her own? Don't understand this at all. And he was calling out, and we had the phone, we was filming on the grave, and we had some, I used dolls as well, just as an object of reference and stuff to see what happens. And the dolls were on the grave, and then we were absolutely, oh, this is horrible, the noises were intense. But we looked back at the comments and we didn't see it, but one of the dolls had moved. You could see it move on the grave. It wasn't windy, and it didn't just knock down. It sort of like jumped up, jumped back down. We watched it back. We're like, what the hell has done that? We had cat balls going off, answering yes, no questions as well. The K2 was going off. Noises were completely intense, and that one was really cool. That one was such a good place, and I would say it's one of my favorites, definitely.
So we've just had a couple of little dropouts, actually. I think it's the internet connection. No, it's absolutely fine. When you were introducing where the graveyard was, it just completely dropped out for about 2 seconds. So beautifully internet. No, it's hugely. Fine. That's fine. Just interesting, actually, talking about the grave robbers and some of the graves with cages over the top of them. I think some of those were to keep the bodies in rather than stop people breaking into them. So I think the ones that I've come across have been usually women, to be quite honest with you, who've been accused of either witchcraft or being vampires, or, you know, something similar to that, and they've actually put cages over the top of the graves to stop the bodies from getting out. Having said that, it would also stop people robbing graves as well, which was obviously quite a lucrative business at certain history, so that's really interesting. Did you see any other paranormal activity while you were there?
I mean, we could see movement around certain graves. I mean, one thing I would do, I mean, I know like ghost hunters do get criticized a lot about going into graveyards. This one was abandoned, and if any graves where we've been to look obviously new, we don't go near them because obviously people's family living try to be that little bit respectful. We was getting names through on the Ouija board, and what somebody said, we think they're the names of the graves. And where we were standing, then a name would come through, I think it was James something or other. We didn't know this, but we were standing right next to his grave. We're like, what the hell? Oh my god, that was really intense. You get really good activity on the Ouija board there. Really good, but I've been back there a few times in the day as well, and it's the difference of the atmosphere. Completely peaceful, completely tranquil. You see walkers walking past it, and like no one knows it's there, but on the night it's just a different matter.
So whereabouts is Bewdley?
Bewdley is in the West Midlands. It's not far from the safari park. So you're looking like Worcester, Kidderminster way.
Okay.
Beautiful little town. Beautiful. Yeah. Advise anyone to go. It's just really lovely.
Okay. So any other live investigations that come to mind?
Yeah. We've gone to great there's up in Birmingham. I'm a nurse, and I did my training at St Margaret's Hospital in Great Bar, and that was a learning disability hospital. It's gone now. It's housing estate, but at the back was Great Bar Hall, and it was owned by the Scott family. And when we were like young students, we'd go up there and we'd scare ourselves. So I thought, oh, let's go down there and see, you know, can we investigate and stuff. And it was brilliant. I did some research before, and one thing that Lady Scott loved was her animals, and she had three graves of her animals by the church, which the church is not far from the hall. And I never told anybody that. People picked that up on the live as well. There was a patient that had came through, and one of the guys that was with me had a head torch on to do the Ouija board, and his torch kept going on and off, and we think it was the patient doing that also as well. We put our table and stuff down, and then we went walking around and going off exploring, and the table moved, and like we couldn't find it for ages, so we couldn't explain that. And I knew the story was Lady Scott is seen by the river, which isn't right next to the church, the hall ruins, and that was also picked up on the live as well. We didn't see it, but somebody else had seen it, and I said, yeah, I can verify that is true. Up the way from it is an old isolation wing, and that's the only thing really that's left from the hospital. And people picked up about that. I never said what it was. You know, they got names of doctors, and figures were seen, not by me, but by people on the live also as well. They got that it was the patients had gone up there if they had chest infections and stuff, and people got that. They picked that bit up, which I thought was absolutely fascinating, because when I post where we're going, I'm a bit guarded about saying too much, but I will confirm after or during the live what people get. I think that's why I love it. I love the lives because they're interactive, and like, you know, it's not just us investigating. There's a whole group of people investigating, helping us also as well. And another famous good one, who put Bella in the witch elm tree? And that's in Hagley Woods. And there was a legend or story of skull was found in the tree, and no one knew who the skull was, but they thought it was a lady called Bella, and she was either an actress or a German spy, and she was murdered by, we think, a lover. And we had a lot of history going into that, and we called out, and we think we contacted the guy who murdered her, because as I was standing on the hill waiting for stuff to happen, I didn't see, but people saw a male figure behind me, and I just felt quite, oh my God, like, I felt overwhelmed, and I needed to go. So we got some good activity on the spirit box. I remember that night as well. It was good communication. We heard Bella, we heard tree, we heard the name actress. So it was all stuff that we knew had happened. It just seemed that they had like corresponded with the information that we knew. So that's a good story. And there's a monument in Hagley Woods, and it's got Who Put Bella in the Witch Elm Tree on it as well. So that's an avid one for ghost hunters.
Okay, no, that's really interesting. So you mentioned actually that you seem to use quite a bit of technology when you're doing your investigations. So what sort of stuff do you use then? And you know, can I genuinely ask why you use it? Because it's not something that when I've been on live investigations, I tend not to use technology, because I personally don't think it's I don't always trust the technology, if you know what I mean. So I'm just interested to sort of understand, you know, why you use it and what you use it for.
Yeah, I'm with you. If I do an investigation, I prefer just to go in and sometimes and stand in the dark and see what happens.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons why we use some stuff, the viewers enjoy it as well. They enjoy the spirit box, and they enjoy the SLS. I think I use it just to see if it adds any value to the evidence that we're getting. But I do think sometimes the spirit, like, you have to debunk a lot of stuff, like the ghost. You can get like a lot of, one of the new things now is using SLS, because it seems picking up, like, if it picks up spirit, it picks up like in the form of a stick man, and that, you know, it's good to see. It is good to see and know that they're there, but you do have to be careful with that thing, because it's quite sensitive and it picks up everything. But Alan, who I've known for years, he's like my ghost hunting best mate. We call him Techno Al, because he's built a lot of his equipment, and like he's built like a spirit box, a Frank's box, and it's just interesting to see how it works and adds that different layer, a dimension to that investigation, really. But I'm still quite old school. I like to go in the dark, use our senses. But sometimes I do think technology helps, because one, the viewers enjoy it, and it adds that layer of evidence.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen you know, the ghost hunting programs on, you know, Amazon and Netflix and you know, wherever they pop up, and whenever they use this gadget that you just mentioned, is it called SLS?
Yeah.
With the stick people.
Yeah.
I'm always a little bit sort of not quite. I can't quite work out what it's all about. That, to be quite honest with you, I'm always a bit sort of reticent to sort of believe that it's actually picking some sort of spirit activity up, you know, because it just seems a little bit too staged to me.
Excuse me. I know what you mean. I did a dolls live last week, and they said, can you use the SLS? And as soon as I used it, I realized it's all picking up the dolls, so I sacked it off. I said it's picking up the dolls. I knew it would, because it's quite sensitive. When Alan uses his, but he, what's he, you know, the camera from a is it the Xbox or something? Mm-hmm. Has that got a camera?
Xbox, not that I'm aware of, no.
But it's either an Xbox or a PlayStation, but he's used that. We was in this place called, we call it the Ivy House. Mm. Excuse me for coughing. Okay. And we thought there was this spirit hiding, keeping this, like, the evidence was there was a spirit hiding and stopping this female coming through. And this male spirit was quite sinister, he's quite dominant. But no one could see anything with the naked eye, but he put the camera up through the roof, which obviously was got holes in it. But we picked up a figure and we were like, what would that be? And I could see upstairs in the roof. He thought, there's nothing up there. Then we thought, it has to be the spirit. Mm-hmm. We were like, oh my God. And so it's been good for stuff like that. And and I knew it wasn't anything else that it was sensitive and picking up to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so no, thought, it's that, perfect. Sure,
that bit was really, really good. That was good. That was a good bit to see. One thing, like, I'm a bit hit and miss with is the Ouija board. Mm-hmm. You can get the yes and you can get the no answers, but sometimes, a lot of time, I find it, you just talk gobbledygook. Like, mm-hmm. You're not making any sense to me, really, at all. But one thing we are finding at the minute is the planchette is going off the board, mm-hmm. and it's pointing here, there, and everywhere. Is it us? I don't know. But is it the spirit? So I'm a bit hit and miss with that. I'm not so bothered, really, about Ouija board.
Ouija boards are interesting. I've not actually told anybody this before. I had quite a strange experience when I was quite young with a Ouija board. And as you do, I was messing about with a friend of mine. We were very, very much into ghosts when we were kids, and my friend had an older brother, and he'd somehow got hold of this item that he said was a Ouija board. It looked like a Ouija board. Lord knows where. I mean, he could have got it from a toy shop for all I know.
Yeah.
But we messed about with it, and we got a car registration through. And about 2 weeks later, I was in my granddad's, back of my granddad's car, and we had a crash with another car. Another car crashed into us. And this was in the days before, you had to wear seatbelts by law. And I was sat in the back seat, and I actually pitched forward and banged my face on the back of the passenger seat.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Broke my nose, and there was blood everywhere.
Oh.
And the it wasn't the full registration number, but part of the registration number that we'd picked up on the Ouija board was actually this other car.
Oh my God.
It was like the first half of it, and then the rest of it wasn't the same, but it was like the first sort of four or five letters and numbers. And you know, I mean, we're going back to when it was like sort of L123ABC. So it was like L123 that we'd picked up that was exactly the same. So yeah, I've always been a little bit wary of Ouija boards ever since then.
Yeah.
And I you know, whether it was just I don't think it was a coincidence. I think it was quite a bad crash. I mean, thankfully nobody was permanently injured or worse. My granddad was driving, my grandma was in the passenger seat. But ever since then, and I mean, that sort of piqued my interest a little bit more in the paranormal. I was always quite interested in that anyway. But yeah, that's a story that I've never actually told anybody before. So that's a first on this episode of the podcast. But yeah, interesting. I mean, do you not then have an awful lot of faith in Ouija boards simply because you think that somebody else could, either subconsciously or consciously be pushing the planchette around?
Yeah, I think you have to be careful, and I think you have to do them with people that you trust, mm-hmm. who know how to use them. And I think people for the first time might be unconsciously doing it and not thinking about what they're actually doing because the planchette's moving and stuff. But I would always say do it with people who know what they're doing. And to open the board up properly and close the board down properly as well. Definitely. I'm very selective of who. Or if I've got other people joining me, I let them do it because I think you have that experience. My favorite thing is standing in and seeing what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're right. I mean, you've got to trust your own senses, and that's why I can tend to be a little bit sort of dismissive of all this technology that people use, because I think that the best technology we have as people who are interested in the paranormal is our own senses, what we can see, what we can hear, what we can feel. And I've said it plenty of times, and I'm sure that you'll agree. It's like, you know, certain people are sort of tuned into a frequency of what's going on around them, and it's like tuning an old radio in, you know, the old dial radio, and you've just got to get that frequency just right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you don't get a clear signal. And I think people in general, I think we're all on different frequencies, or I think we are all sensitive to different frequencies, and I think that's why when you do these investigations, you find that some people will see things or hear things or feel things, and you think to yourself, well, I haven't seen it, I haven't heard it, I haven't felt that, you know, and yet, you know, vice versa, you might pick up on something that other people think is talking rubbish, because I didn't see anything. So I think it's interesting, it's very scientific, very interesting scientifically about how we perceive the world around us, and how we perceive energy, and how we pick up on energy. But no, certainly Ouija boards are not my favorite thing at all. Have you got any upcoming live broadcasts that you could tell us about?
So next Tuesday, I will be posting it this week. We've got a live broadcast called Underneath the Arches. So we are going to an area in Birmingham called Digbeth. And it's got these beautiful, beautiful alleyways. And, you know, it's a very urban area now. But there's an arch. And it's over like a canal. So we just wanted to go down and see what that's about. I mean, the history of Digbeth, Peaky Blinders. So that one's coming up. We're going to return back to Great Bar Hall also as well, and the graveyard. We've also, I didn't want to do it, but we also have organised a paid investigation and at the Haunted Antiques Paranormal Research Centre in Hinckley. Brilliant place. So we've got 16 people coming with us just to do that. So everyone wanted to meet in person.
Yeah.
Or just having a drink for that. So that one's coming up, and it sold out within 24 hours. I was amazed.
Wow. Brilliant.
I'll keep posting reels of stuff that I've documented and stuff. So, yeah, it's busy time coming up.
So, basically, I need to get this edited and out by next Tuesday, which is sort of two days away from now. So, otherwise, people might miss it. So, I'll try and get the podcast out so that people have got at least 24 hours and they know it. Whereabouts can they find you then? Is it? It's called Creeping It Real on Facebook. Is that right?
Yeah, so it's Creeping It Real on Facebook. So you'll know us because our profile picture is a lady with long black sticky out hair. So yeah, if you put it in, we should come up. And currently, the cover photo is of a graveyard I went to in London.
Okay, so cool.
To look. Yeah.
Well, that's a story for another time, I think. It's been absolutely fantastic. I've really enjoyed your stories, actually. You're quite really sort of, you know, different stories, quite diverse, different places that you go to. I think it's a really interesting group that you've got going there. So, I urge people to check you out and watch some of your live escapades.
they're definitely an escapade. We like to have a laugh as well. I think that's really good because I'm always conscious of the fact that people are watching as well, and you want to make it a bit entertaining. So we are a very, very friendly group, and even though I run the group, I always make sure that it's inclusive of everybody. So I think that's really important. So we're one big creepy family.
Absolutely not. No, well, it's been absolutely great to have you on. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us all about your adventures, and we will have to speak again soon.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for experience and having me on. Really appreciate it.
No problem at all. Thank you and take care. Thanks very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
You can visit my website at www.craigbryant.co.uk. Paranormal Pendle will return, and remember to keep watching the shadows.